Whenever I do a mailbag podcast, it seems to cover various topics concerning Sun Devil sports. There are the micro issues concerning the bigger sports such as football, basketball, baseball. And there are the macro issues regarding the athletic department, its current state, and its future direction. When I solicited questions from ASU fans for this podcast, and thank you to all who contributed, it seemed that the macro questions concerning the athletic department were more prevalent, had a sharper tone, and honestly for very good reasons, than the specific questions on certain sports. Nonetheless, no matter what the overlying tone of this podcast will be, I will provide my answers and my opinions on those topics. So thank you so much for tuning in, and let's get this thing started. Welcome to this episode of the Devil's Junkies podcast. I'm your host and DevilsDigest.com publisher, Hode Rubino. And it's been a while since you and I met on this podcast. And I thought to kick off if the new season of the Devil's Junkies podcast, if you will, I would start with giving you, the ASU fan, the stage to ask your questions or, as some portrayed it, airing your grievances concerning ASU sports. And whoa, was there a lot to unload when it comes to that topic. So, as I always do, I will take care of those first who take care of me, my premium subscribers at devilsdigest.com, and jump right into our premium message board, Devil's Huddle, for the first question, which comes from West Valley Devil, who is asking, in my opinion, when you talk about the three big sports, football, basketball, and baseball, which ones has me the most optimistic? And that's a great question, because there's no doubt that both sports finished their respective seasons. Baseball obviously still going on as we speak, but both football and basketball did finish their respective campaigns with one of the worst records in program history for each sport. And baseball, the season is going on as we speak. And as I sit here and record the podcast, ASU was guaranteed a series win against Arizona, winning two games in Tucson, nonetheless. And maybe by the end of this podcast, we'll know if they're able to sweep the Wildcats or not. But it's definitely been a rocky season for Willie Bloomquist's squad, by all means. But let's go sports by sport, and I'll start with football. I'm a believer in Kenny Dillingham, the direction that he's taking this program. But he obviously had a major cleanup to address when it came to this ASU football team. And even though I thought that winning five, maybe even six games in his first year was realistic with the talent that he had on hand, with the schedule, that obviously did not materialize. And it really just became one long, struggling season for the Sun Devils. But I do feel that when it comes to the caliber of coaches that Kenny Dillingham has been able to assemble, when it comes to the talent, both the returning talent and the talent that he was able to get, not only from the transfer portal, but even also from the recruiting class, I think there are pieces in place to be generally optimistic that this ASU football team can really march in the right direction. And I know that clearing a bar of three wins in 2024 shouldn't be a big problem. But nonetheless, I just think that aside, this is a program that we can expect to see better results, better production in 2024. And specifically addressing your question about what is life in the Big 12 going to look like? Is it going to be kinder, quote unquote, easier for the football program than it was in the Pac-12? I think there is some merit to that, because I felt that, especially in the month of November, ASU really had a murderer's row of a schedule. I mean, you looked at a road game at Utah, a road game at UCLA, which ended up obviously with an ASU win. But I think also you caught a UCLA team at a very good spot in that given night in the Rose Bowl, that you were able to actually win that game. And then you had two home games against Oregon and against Arizona, which, much like the road game of Salt Lake City against Utah early in the month, really were resounding defeats. And I just don't think that caliber of programs really exists in the Big 12. And look, it's not me, being arrogant about a conference that I know not only myself, but all of us really have a lot to learn about, a lot to familiarize ourselves with. But I just don't see really juggernauts that are absolutely going to dominate the conference year in and year out, like we've seen with Oregon, Washington, most years USC, you pepper in UCLA, here and there, Oregon State, a very strong program in years past. I just don't see that caliber of opponents really existing in the Big 12. You know, you can make the argument that now that Texas and Oklahoma have departed the conference, and obviously you have ASU, Arizona, Utah and Colorado entering the conference, that maybe teams like Utah and Arizona might be the stronger programs in the conference. And we look at the returning members, Oklahoma State, a team that ironically ASU is very familiar with, finishing a home-and-home series in the last 2 years, and now obviously they're going to get to see them much more often in the Big 12, are really the teams that I think in some shape or form are going to be number one through number three when the preseason media poll comes out. But if that's really what you have to quote-unquote fear, and maybe fear is too strong a word, I'll strike that, but maybe just really look as the major challenge that you have, I think I'll take that over Oregon, over Washington, over USC when things were clicking for them, even over a team like Oregon State. So I think that football is really what makes me the most optimistic out of the three in terms of the future of in the Big 12. Basketball, I mean, wow, where do you even start? An extremely disappointing season, and now you're going into the toughest conference in America, the Big 12. And you just have to look at how many teams have qualified for the NCAA tournament. I'm recording this, ironically, on Selection Sunday, so you can look at the bracket, and you can see not only quite a few teams from the Big 12, but many of them ranked way high up there in the seedings. Houston, obviously, number one. So it's going to be quite the treacherous water to navigate for an ASU program that has issues they need to figure out with NIL in terms of retaining their core players, in terms of attracting good players. I know Bobby Hurley's coaching, and rightfully so, has really come under a lot of scrutiny. Because it seemed like it's not only ASU, you know, losing a lot of Pac-12 conference games, but more often than not, those losses were in double digits, and more often than not only in double digits, but absolutely just being blown out of the water. So I think there's a lot of pessimism concerning this ASU basketball program, and even if it stayed in the Pac-12, and the Pac-12, I thought, in some respects, was very mediocre. There was a lot of parity that existed. Even in a year like that, when ASU wasn't able to do much of anything, and that's probably putting it kindly, now you're going to the Big 12. And I think that the forecast for this team, once those preseason polls come out, are going to really paint a very, very bleak picture. I mean, it's been a while since ASU in basketball was ranked near last, or maybe two spots above last place in a preseason poll in the Pac-12. But I think coming right out of the gates in their first year in the Big 12, they're definitely going to be seeing that as just the general projection of the program. So I'm definitely pessimistic about the basketball team when it comes to their future in the Big 12. And this is not me being outlandish. This is not me overly harsh or even trying to generate any clickbaits. But I just think realistically, when you not only look at the current state of this ASU basketball program, and again, not to belabor the point, but just the lack of NIL, which really had a team absolutely gutted from last year, a team that not only made the NCAA tournament, but also won 23 games. you know, now you kind of wonder, has NIL really improved since then to the point that you can keep your core players, you can really land quality players from the transfer portal because your NIL coffers are in much better shape? That's just a huge, huge question mark. But really, that aside, you're really going into the lion's den when you're talking about being a member of Big 12 basketball. And, you know, even a team like Utah, a team like Colorado, who's, you know, the decent teams in the Pac-12. I mean, Utah was probably one or two wins away from qualifying for the NCAA tournament. You know, Colorado, obviously, by the skin of their teeth, but nonetheless, also in the NCAA tournament. Even teams like that, I think, are going to have a really hard time establishing themselves in the upper echelon of the Big 12 conference. And if I'm saying that about teams like Colorado and Utah, who definitely had much better seasons than ASU, then what can you say about the Sun Devils in that regard? So that is definitely going to be a rocky introduction. You look at the 24-25 season for ASU basketball. So that is definitely the sport that I feel the least optimistic about. As far as baseball, it's really somewhere in the middle. As we're recording this podcast, we know that ASU has won their first Pac-12 series and actually did that on the road against the University of Arizona. So some kudos for the baseball team, especially the pitching that they displayed in the first two games was something that was definitely an eye-opener in every positive aspect. But is this a team that can really get over the hump? We all know that last season they were viewed as a snub, a harsh snub, even if you will, from being excluded from the NCAA tournament. Can they get over the hump now in this current year? And the start definitely has been very, very rocky, just really hovering around 500 for the most part, having some questionable out-of-conference losses. Is this a team that can really instill confidence in you when it comes to the Big 12? And you know, in terms of the strength of the Big 12, I think that it's not noticeably weaker or stronger than the Pac-12, at least judging this by the results up until March 17th, and maybe in a month or two, there's going to be a different picture painted in that regard. But I think with baseball, it's really TBD, if you would ask me, if I'm optimistic or pessimistic on how they're going to do in the Big 12, and I'm not in the short term, but the long term. I think Willie Bloomquist, is a good coach, and what I like about him is the same thing I like about Kenny Dillingham, and the head football coach, and that is both having extreme passion level for the programs, being alumnus, and I think that there's definitely something to be said about that when you're trying to really navigate through an absolute impossible landscape in some regards to navigate, whether it's NIL, whether it's a transfer portal. And, you know, sometimes you just need to have that special element, that X factor, if you will, from actually being an alumnus of the school. So devoting a little more than probably some other head coaches do, knowing that you're here from the long term because you're really called upon to save the program, to really march the program in a different direction. You know, maybe those are factors that can help Kenny Dillingham in football, that can help Willie Bloomquist in baseball as they enter Big 12 Conference. The next question comes from the original Sun Devil for Life. Any idea when the football investigation will finally wrap up so we can move on? And any rumblings or rumors of who the next athletic director might be? So when it comes to the NCAA investigation about the alleged recruiting violations committed by the ASU football program, an investigation that we all know started in May of 2021, and here we are nearly 3 years later still awaiting the resolution. As some of you may know, this phase of the investigation is entering the last phase, I should say, and that is the negotiated resolution on the sanctions. Obviously, we know that Arizona State have offered one sacrificial lamb after another, either suspending and ultimately parting ways with several assistant coaches, whether it's really precluding themselves from performing recruiting activities on campus and off campus, and obviously the biggest self-imposed sanction of them all, the postseason ban, which just like everybody listening to this podcast, I am also very disappointed in former athletic director Ray Anderson not imposing that postseason ban during the 2022 season, when you know that the program was absolutely going nowhere, actually electing to do that in 2023 in Kenny Dillingham's first year. That was plain and simple BS to do such a move. But, you know, back to the question. So with all those self-imposed steps that Arizona State has taken to date, and really, again, you're talking about going back almost 3 years, when you look at those self-imposed actions, ASU obviously is expected from the NCAA some leniency in terms of what are the final sanctions are going to look like when this investigation is concluded. And the reason we have a negotiated phase right now is because the NCAA is telling ASU, well, you know, it's all nice and dandy that you did offer your own pound of flesh for the last 3 years, but that's not enough. And we want to hit you with this or that level of sanction, which ASU, and I think rightfully so, is absolutely opposed to that. So as these negotiations are going on, we still don't know when that phase is going to be concluded. You know, I've guessed, like everybody else in the past, of when I thought it was going to be wrapped up. And, you know, part of me thought that maybe by the end of the 2023 calendar year, it was going to happen. And if not, it wouldn't be shortly. It would only be shortly after the New Year's in 2024. But, you know, here we are, just almost 3 months past in the current calendar year, and we still do not have a resolution. You're almost afraid to guess about the timeline when it comes to the NCAA investigation. As much as I can offer any kind of time frame over here, I would be absolutely floored if this really spills into the summer. And I know summer is, you know, 3 months away, so maybe that's not a particularly risky statement to make. But nonetheless, I feel that there's only so much negotiation that can really take place in terms of what the level of sanctions should be. And I don't know if it's going to take one side over the other, just finally buckling and finally wanting to get this thing over and move on. And I'm not implying that it's going to be ASU necessarily that is going to want to wrap this up as quickly as possible. Again, this really hasn't been, you know, quickly as all. But I think in some respects, ASU does want to put this behind them. And that brings me to the second question that you ask about having a new athletic director, because we all know that ASU wants to have this investigation concluded in its rearview mirror, the sanctions being crystal clear in terms of how they're going to be levied on Arizona State before they hire a new athletic director. Now, aside from that aspect, you also have an athletic department that Ray Anderson really left in disarray, and you're looking at a lot of operational and budgetary processes which were very faulty, which only handicapped this athletic department that much more. You look at the fact that Bobby Hurley, who agreed on an extension with ASU almost 12 months ago, has still not officially signed his contract extension, just because the language of the contract as crafted by ASU's legal department was not sufficient to get this extension pen to paper signed and sealed. So, and that's only just one example of the operational dysfunction that this athletic department has. So those are some issues that need to be cleaned up. And again, you talk about you want the NCAA investigation into the football program and regarding the alleged recruiting violations be concluded. You want all that to be behind you before you can really search in earnest for an athletic director and hire them, because I honestly think that while there may be some athletic directors out there that would actually look forward to the challenge of coming into a new job and really trying to have things cleaned up and streamlined, I just think that the level of dysfunction that exists at ASU is really that high that you can't just assume that you can attract a quality, and I stress a quality candidate, not somebody that's just happy to be here because they came from a Group 5 school, because they came from an FCS school, to really be here in Tempe. If you want to attract somebody who's really going to move the needle, you need to really have a landscape that is going to be as easy as possible for them to deal with, because they're going to have challenges of their own coming into the role of athletic director at ASU. But you just want to really minimize those level and those quantity of challenges as much as possible. So that's why we have not heard about a hire of the athletic director at ASU some 4 months after Ray Anderson and ASU parted ways. I know the optics are horrible, and I know what I'm saying right now is not what ASU fans want to hear, and that probably is a statement that qualifies for some other answers I'm going to provide during this podcast. But that's where we're at. So in terms of who I think are going to be some of the more feasible candidates that can really talk about, if you're talking about an internal hire, Graham Russini, who was heavily involved in the naming rights for Desert Financial Arena, as well as Mountain America Stadium. I think that in terms of internal candidate, the associate athletic director is really not only the prime candidate, but the only candidate I can see if University President Michael Kor decided to hire from within. If you're looking at an outside hire, I think that David Benedict, the University of Connecticut athletic director, and if that name sounds familiar to some ASU fans, yes, he's somebody who grew up in the Valley and also was in the athletic administration under Gene Smith right after the turn of the century. And I know that sounds like a really long time ago, but we're really talking about 20 years ago or so. Obviously, went to the University of Connecticut, the reigning national championship in basketball. And he's someone that has very extensive ties to the Valley, very extensive ties to ASU. Did not graduate from ASU, but nonetheless, I think does check a lot of boxes in terms of being familiar with the school, being familiar with the landscape that it provides, both from a sports and a non-sports perspective, and just really being familiar with the Valley in general in terms of a place to live. So that is, I think, one of the biggest feasible names out there that ASU is going to pursue. I know the name Rocky Harris came up a lot. He's almost a carbon copy of David Benedict with the fact that he actually is an ASU alumnus, and somebody, again, that I would think, just like Benedict, would really want to repair an athletic department in a place that he really has a great deal of love and respect to. The thing with Rocky Harris is that he is one of the higher executives in the U.S. Olympics organization, I believe, triathlon. Is a sport that he is, one of the high-level administrators there. As we all know, we're in Olympic year in about 5 or so months. The Olympics are going to take place in Paris. And I just don't see not only Rocky Harris, but really any other U.S. Olympics official at his level deciding to take another job when you're really that close for the Olympics happening. I've heard also mixed messages in terms of how much he does really get along with Michael Kor or not. And I think that's something also really to keep in mind. I mean, if ASU was willing to wait until after the Olympics to hire an athletic director, and I don't think it's a luxury you can afford by any means, maybe then you could talk to Rocky Harris. But also don't forget that the next Olympics in 2028 are going to be in Los Angeles. So again, when you're talking about a very high-level executive in U.S. Olympics, I mean, are they going to want to resign and really venture into somewhat unfamiliar waters. I mean, even though they do have some background with ASU, but nonetheless, I mean, just venture into such a position when you're so close for having the Olympics from happening, and then you have the Olympics in your backyard 4 years later. It just doesn't seem like the timing is right for somebody like Rocky Harris. But, you know, to answer your questions, those are the names that I can see ASU really pursuing in earnest. And, maybe one name that's been a popular name between Florida Northern and Rocky Harris, a name that I simply do not see feasible as happening as Arizona State's new athletic director. The next question comes from a larger parcel. When is ASU going to break ground on the new medical school? That's the first question, so I'll address that one. I believe they already did technically break ground, but I know fall of 2026 in downtown Phoenix, that's when the medical school is going to be open. He wrote in parentheses, and will this also mark the likely retirement date of ASU president Michael Crow, somebody who was... hasn't handled the athletic department in the greatest of manners during his tenure in Tempe. I think that that might be an item that was on Michael Crow's professional bucket list. And now that has been achieved and will become reality in fall of 2026, I think there's definitely valid speculation that that might be the date that he's going to retire. I think if you're an ASU sports fan, you hope it's going to happen much, much before the fall of 2026. But if you told me that that is a likely scenario to take place, sure, I definitely do believe that. And back to the sports topics, is ASU using outside contract counsel to represent it in its negotiations with the NCAA? And if so, which firm is handling it? To the best of my knowledge, I don't think that they've had a permanent, consistent outside counsel to deal with the NCAA in the negotiated resolution. I know that there are some members in the compliance department at ASU who are really seasoned veterans. Some of them have been working in the NCAA legal department previously. So, definitely folks that, aside from being high-caliber legal scholars, also specifically speaking, really know the ways of the NCAA legals department when they try to impose certain sanctions on a school, what have you. So, to the best of my knowledge, if there is any outside contract counsel, it's not something that's really... at a high level of involvement, if at all. And I don't think this is necessarily, and I don't know if you were asking this question subconsciously or not, I don't think it's necessarily something that's really hindering ASU right now from achieving a negotiated resolution that they feel that is fair. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I just feel that ASU has made a lot of concessions, both in quality and quantity, over the last 3 years. And when you do engage in such actions, you are definitely expecting, and rightfully so, for the other party, the NCAA in this case, to really react in kind. And when they have the proposed sanctions levied on Arizona State, that is definitely going to take in consideration what ASU has done in terms of self-imposed actions, again, almost for the last 3 years. So I think that's really what's taking place right now. And again, the presence or the absence of an outside contract counsel is nothing that's really being the stick in the wheels, so to speak. Two questions over here from ASU Football 2219. One of them tongue-in-cheek. Do you think that certain numeric conferences like the Big 12, the Big 10 and the Big 12, at some point undergo new name branding in the addition and subtractions of their teams? Because he says that the SEC and the ACC are really lucky, for lack of a term, not having some of those idiosyncrasies. That's an interesting question. And I think it's one that with the contract expansion, the conference expansions in both leagues, question that has been asked not once and not twice. And I think this comes to brand name. And I think the brand of the Big Ten, the brand of the Big 12 is really too strong that you just don't want to really mess with something that is working. You know, I would say especially the Big Ten, which just really seems like a conference that is definitely in the high tier of the SEC. And if some of you guys have been following recent news of what an expanded playoff field is going to look like, you can definitely see the SEC and the Big Ten really putting their thumb down, and I would say even demanding. I wouldn't put that in air quotes, that they have a bigger representation than other conferences, even including the major conferences like the Big 12 and the ACC, and having more representation in that playoff field. So, you know, I guess when you look at that just in a vacuum, why would a conference like the Big 10 want to change their name even if they have more than 10 teams? And same thing with the Big 12. So to answer your questions, I think that brand name, whether it's sports or non-sports, is something that really does end up prevailing a lot of other factors. So I definitely think that those conference names are here to stay. The second question is, can you give a ranking 1 to 16 in the Big 12 of the effectiveness and stability of each school? You know, that's something that is really hard to do in a podcast format. Definitely providing an article about that is something that sure is something I plan to do in the future. What I usually do around this time of year in the spring, it's probably going to take place really more in April than it will in March, is really just go opponent by opponent. And obviously this year it's only going to be Big 12 opponents plus Mississippi State, the SEC opponent, which is one of the non-conference games for the Sun Devils, and ask their respective beat writers to provide me, and really provide the ASU fans, I should say, just a snapshot of how their team is looking after spring practice. So as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot that ASU fans and even ASU beat writers like myself really have to familiarize ourselves with a brand new conference. I mean, sure, we can look at a team like Kansas or Kansas State, which, won 10 games last year and really have our own, thoughts about them. But, you know, nonetheless, those are not programs that we're really familiar with their recent or even distant history as a football program. So just to get a more accurate picture of what those programs look like, that is definitely something that I do plan to discuss. I mean, and maybe by default, you also talk about the stability of a football program when you know where they've been and where they're headed to in 2024. The next question comes from TAS 88. What's going to be the most surprising aspects of going to the Big 12 from the Pac-12. Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious is just really going to a lot of destinations that you never thought that you're going to see on a regular basis. I mean, sure, it's ironic. Here you are playing at Stillwater, Oklahoma, and facing Oklahoma State just 2 years after you were played a non-conference game over there on a contract that was signed years and years ago before there was any inclination that the Pac-12 was going to have members migrate into the Big 12. But, you know, aside from just the travel aspect, I think one aspect which not going to be surprising, but definitely going to be different, is going to be the level of passion of those fan bases. You know, you talk about, you know, football in Texas being a religion, and obviously we have multiple teams, from that state, but even, you know, teams like Oklahoma State, like both Kansas schools, who have now enjoyed some recent success. I think you're going to find it to a level that's not going to match the SEC or maybe even not match the Big Ten. But yeah, I think Kenny Dillingham did mention that in one of his recent interviews, that ASU fans are going to realize that whether ASU is hosting a game or traveling to one of the destinations, they're going to have to bring it. They're going to have to bring it in numbers. They're going to have to bring it in their in their passion and in terms of how they support the team. Again, I'm not going to call it a surprising aspect, but I think aspect that's going to look very, very different than what we're used to seeing, you know, in the Pac-12. Because, I mean, maybe sometimes, you know, you let's say travel to Pullman and you would get a very engaged fan base over there at Washington State, but it's still going to be at a much lower level, even compared to a team like Kansas State, for example. You know, then you have teams like, you know, Cal and Stanford, where, you know, the several road games that I covered for each team. I mean, you talk about an absolute doormat, you know, fan base. And as much as people may sometimes criticize the ASU fan base here in Tempe, I mean, trust me, you know, you cover games over there at Stanford or at Berkeley, and trust me, those fan bases are just nothing to write home about. And I think that if you're an ASU fan, an ASU team for that matter, you're going to encounter less and less of that. And I think in basketball, and then again, I talked about the Big 12 being the best basketball conference in the nation, you're going to experience that even more, the passion. I mean, you know, Kansas, you know, for example, yes, ASU played an outstanding game to win at Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence, but it wasn't because that fan base was sitting on their hands for 40 minutes. And even teams like Kansas State and maybe teams that are kind of, you know, lesser known in comparison, like Cincinnati and like West Virginia. I mean, those are just fan bases that are very, very passionate, not only in football, but also in basketball. So I think, you know, that's really the one aspect that's going to be an eye-opener. I think that ASU fans are maybe already preparing themselves for that. But really, I would say, you know, that and just, you know, traveling, maybe not longer distances, because I think there was somebody, and I forget who it is, I do apologize, that actually did a chart of what ASU's travel is going to look like in the Big 12 compared to the Pac-12, and the distances, miles-wise, were really not that great. Now, ASU is not playing University of Central Florida in Orlando or West Virginia this year, so maybe when those games come up on the radar as away games, the chart might look a little differently. But I would say just traveling in terms of, you know, places that you really haven't been to on a permanent basis and sometimes are going to be a little longer even than a trip to Seattle or Pullman, and just the passion level of the fan bases. Those are two aspects that I think are going to be much different, maybe not surprising necessarily, but much different than what you used to in the Pac-12. The next question comes from LVME1208. It may be early, but do we have any idea what the ASU basketball team and who may expect it to enter the transfer portal, or we have a better idea after the national championship game? I think it really comes down to NIL, and I know I mentioned that earlier in the podcast. And even if a guy like Frankie Collins or Adam Miller really loves Bobby Hurley, really loves Tempe, really loves the program, when somebody comes knocking on their door with a larger, let alone a significantly larger NIL paycheck, is that really going to be the end-all be-all? Is that just going to be the point of no return of a player leaving a program? I think that ASU really does have to be prepared you know, for that. But those are two players that I think right off the bat, I think would be the prime candidates to leave ASU, again, if the NIL picture is one that that really just provides an opportunity that you just you know, think you cannot pass. So that's something that I would look into. By the way, the transfer portal for basketball does open on March 18th and does last 45 days. So we can, you know, in theory, see movement over there. Just because a player went into the portal doesn't mean they cannot exit the portal and come back to ASU. And that brings me to Jemiah Neal, who did exactly that after last season. And I think Jemiah definitely made a jump in terms of his production, in terms of his development. And I think he's another player that does, you know, have a chance to leave ASU again. I think it's really going to be just purely NIL related. I know you didn't mention this, but ASU does have a top 25 recruiting class, and three of those players are, they do stand 6'8" or taller. So I think they're on paper, they could be like a really nice infusion of new talent into this ASU team, not to the level that it can really compensate from potentially, and I say potentially, losing a Frankie Collins or losing an Adam Miller. But nonetheless, I still think that it's still maybe one aspect that can make or break that first year in the Big 12, which, again, I know the projections are going to be pretty gloomy when it comes to ASU's low level of success in the Big 12 in the 24-25 season. But if some way, somehow, you have most of those incoming freshmen really performing at a high level, and again, I think they're really coming, some of them at least, with some high accolades out of high school, maybe ASU can weather the storm. But I think that if you're losing any of the three, and Frankie Collins, Adam Miller, Jamiah Neal, those are going to be really, really hard to replenish, even from the transfer portal. So we will see what does happen, but you just can't stress enough. NIL dictates everything in college sports. And when it comes to ASU basketball, that is an aspect that did hurt him last year, losing key players like Warren Washington and Devon Cambridge, for example. And that's something that can, in theory, also have them lose some key players from this current roster. So now let's move on to questions from Twitter. I know some of you guys like to call it X. To me, it's still Twitter. And I think that if you tell somebody that I saw something in X or I posted something on X, they might look at you a little funny. So let's stick with Twitter. I think that's the term that everybody's familiar with. The first question comes from Bus B. I was just curious to see where all the sports will be streaming when not on national TV. I've been watching the Pac-12 live streams for their awful app, and have Sling TV for all Pac-12 regional networks. Moving into the Big 12, will everything be streamed on ESPN+? The answer is yes, before I continue with your other question. So ESPN+ is definitely your friend if you're an ASU fan and do want to catch the action in football, basketball, and baseball. So it's definitely going to be a much easier platform for folks to have access to. You can talk about a very low bar to clear when it comes to comparing that to the Pac-12 network, but nonetheless, you definitely want to sign up for ESPN+, because if a game is not going to be on national TV, it is going to be on that platform. Also, second question is, with hockey, we will need to purchase an NCHC streaming package, or will those games be on ESPN+? To the best of my knowledge, there is going to be a streaming package for the NCHC. That's not to say that you're never going to see an ASU hockey game ever on ESPN+, but if you do want to catch all the action of any given season, there is going to be that platform on that new conference that ASU is joining. Some called it, I think it was actually head coach Greg Powers called it the SEC Conference of Hockey. It's definitely going to be one heck of a challenging conference for the Sun Devils. If they can find success over there, then you definitely know that this Sun Devil program has made it. But yes, there's going to be a streaming package, I'm sorry, for the NCHC conference. Once those details become more public and clearer, I will definitely share it on my platform. Again, I think it's going to be just like ESPN+, a very easily accessible platform to access if you do want to follow. The team on any given season. The next question does come from Alec Villalobos. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. For next year's basketball team, what would be the total budget of NIL that Bobby Hurley will need to build an NCAA tournament team? And it is realistic to get that amount. Bobby Hurley, I believe it wasn't, maybe not quite at the end of the regular season, I'm sorry, did say in a radio interview to 98.7 FM that he did feel that the NIL level for the basketball team is at a better place, maybe even said much better place, than it was this time last year. And again, as we know, this time last year, because NIL coffers were not sufficient, you did lose some key players as a result. And that's something that definitely hurt the team in the season that just ended. in terms of a figure, the figure that I was given for basketball is just around $1 million per year. $1.5 million would make you sleep even better at night in terms of not having to lose key players because of NIL. How realistic it is getting that amount, I think it's going to be a challenge. I'm not going to say an insurmountable challenge, but I think it's going to be a challenge. Now, again, if you're reading between the lines of what Bobby Hurley said, maybe that amount is something that is definitely within grasp. I mean, again, Bobby Hurley in that interview definitely portrayed some optimism when it comes to the NIL level that ASU has and the NIL level that could help it in the future. Whether that is actually something that's going to materialize itself, I mean, obviously there's going to come a point where you're going to see which players you did or did not lose to make that statement really carry some water. But again, since you did ask about a specific figure, I would definitely say that $1 million to $1.5 million is what ASU basketball is going to need year in and year out. It's not a great amount when you compare it to football, which needs easily double that, maybe probably even more than double that. But you're also talking about really soliciting that money from a smaller pool of boosters. So maybe that's one factor that can help ASU in that endeavor. And at this point, I'm going to move to Facebook for the last set of questions. And the first question comes from Arnold Moreno. What is the new model that Michael Crow wants to create? Is it more an internal, looking to eliminate the transfer portal NIL from ASU as much as possible? It sure sounds like he wants the long-term student-athletes and then brings them to the athletic department that will adhere to this model. Look, I mean, I think that Michael Crow and even Ray Anderson at the time definitely made some unfortunate statements that did imply that ASU was not going to deal with NIL and were really opposed to the transfer model instead of embracing it, instead of trying to look for ways to work with it. And that is something that definitely did hurt ASU in the first couple of years when the NIL and transfer portal really became a reality. And I would say a very inconvenient reality for that matter. And, you know, Ray Anderson said that he resigned because he just doesn't want to deal with those two elements. This is one thing that actually I happen to believe him, but believe when he does state that, he definitely said a lot of other stuff that was really, really hard to believe or really just made you roll your eyes to begin with. But, you know, those are elements that, you know, maybe not only him, but a lot of athletic directors rather not deal with. But, you know, that's the type of narrative, I'm sorry, that is really better served to use your inside voice if we're looking to use that term than actually just put it out there, because you're definitely portraying a picture where you just giving up, and you're not willing up to keep up with the Joneses, you're not willing up to keep up with the times. So I have no doubt in my mind that Michael Crow definitely did have that initial thinking. And I'm not saying Ray Anderson said what he said because his boss, Michael Crow, was really conveying the same sentiment. But I do feel that Michael Crow knows that the NIL is here to stay and the transfer portal is here to stay. And maybe there'll be some legislation by the end of the century that will change one or both very prominent elements of college sports. I mean, my own view is that the NIL is not sustainable. I mean, you're already seeing the Wild West mentality that this element has. You don't have any checks and balances on it, on which boosters you know, can talk to the wish athletes. And even though the school is not supposed to be involved, obviously there are a lot of ways to really skirt around that predicament, which really isn't much of a predicament. There was a recent lawsuit where the NCAA basically had their other wings cut off, if you will, and they can't enforce any punishment when it comes to NIL and how it's administered. So it's not a sustainable model, and it's going to be gone, I feel, by the end of this decade, or if not gone, at least revamped in such a major manner that it looks like nothing like the NIL that does exist, you know, right now. And maybe that's something that Michael Crow is hoping for. And I don't know if that was really part of your question or not, but I do think that Michael Crow knows very well that whatever athletic director he's going to hire is really going to have to provide a much better leadership, a much better approach than Ray Anderson ever had when it comes to NIL and even when it comes to the transfer portal, you know, for that matter. I know that Michael Crow's model, it's something that obviously was conveyed through Ray Anderson too, was really to have as many sports as possible. And something that I've talked to a lot to my subscribers on my premium message board, Devil's Huddle, is that is another aspect right now of college sports is not sustainable. ASU has, if I'm not mistaken, 26 different sports where most members of the Big 12, the conference are going to enter to officially in a few months, have less than 20. So to really enter the Big 12 with all that excessive quote-unquote fat when it comes to an abundance of sports, something that's a drain on an athletic department that is not flushed with funds by any means, and really forcing too much to create an unlevel playing field compared now to your new conference foes, that's something that puts ASU not behind the eight ball, I mean, way behind the eight ball in trying to sustain any kind of success. And look, and I said it even just earlier today to my previous subscribers, it really does break your heart that you're going to have this or that sport eliminated and to really deny the opportunity of young men, young women, to play college sports and earn a scholarship in the process. I mean, I don't think it would be a left field statement to state that most student athletes that participate at ASU and pretty much almost every other school for that matter cannot just have their parents pay for their college expenses for the next 3-4 years and not bat an eyelash and not go through a student loan or maybe even a second mortgage or whatever the case may be. And, you know, some parents can't even take that route of a loan to really have their son or their daughter be part of the college experience. So having that scholarship has been an absolute godsend for so many families, not only ASU, but really across the nation. But on the other hand, really most of the sports that exist at ASU, and again, this is not a picture that's skewed compared to other programs in the Big 12, compared to other programs all across the country, really do are fully dependent on football. I mean, basketball is usually self-sustained. You have hockey at ASU, for example, that is self-sustained. Or if you go to women's basketball, you know, UConn, Tennessee, South Carolina, I mean, those are programs that don't need the football money to survive. But you have a lot of other sports, and even take a sport like swimming. I mean, Bob Bowen, the head coach, has done absolutely wonders with that program. I mean, arguably the best swim coach in America, so maybe expected that to happen. But that swimming program, which just won the Pac-12 championship last week, cannot exist without getting monies, you know, from football. And that's not the only sport. So it's really becoming a challenge. How many smaller sports can you keep that are really preventing ASU football from having a bigger budget? Because we talk about keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, the first thing that really does come to mind is, you know, the ASU football program, and can really really, you know, to take itself to take itself to the next level, not so much of having, you know, NIL money, but just having a bigger budget, because you can attract better coaches. If you need to hire from the outside, you can retain better coaches because you're able to pay the market value, and maybe sometimes even more than that. But if you have sport X or sports Y that is causing you as a football program to have a smaller budget, that definitely becomes an issue. So again, I think that Michael Crow, as much as he wants to have upteen number of sports and ASU does realize that it's not going to be anything sustainable. And I would really hope that the athletic director, whomever he hires, would feel the same. Next question for Facebook comes from Don Larson. My biggest concern is the situation with the athletic director position. What is going on there? Any insights would be appreciated. Well, I did address it earlier, but in terms of a timeline, which I don't think I mentioned that before. And again, it is contingent, I think, first and foremost, with the NCAA sanctions, the negotiated sanctions, I should say, being resolved, as to when that's going to take place. So I think that April, May is somewhat of a realistic time frame that we could see a new athletic director in place. I know the NCAA really holds all the cards over here in terms of the resolution being negotiated to ASU satisfaction, and does it take place closer to April or closer to May? But once that is resolved, then that is when we can expect to have a new athletic director in place. Next question comes from Alan Ford. Why is Ray Anderson still earning his obscenely large paycheck, which is just under $1 million, teaching a law school class with four other professors? I wonder if all that real qualified professors at the Sandra Day O'Connor School of Law think about that. Must ASU owe him the blood money anyway, so they might as well make him teach. Ray should give all that money back and slink out of town with his tail between his legs. Look, I mean, there's no doubt that Ray Anderson getting a really nice golden parachute, which I guess has to do some minimal work for, because usually when you get a golden parachute, you don't do anything to earn that money, is something that is definitely has drawn the ire of ASU fans, which on the one hand, we're happy to see him finally go. And I would, put myself in that group as well, because he definitely did a lot more damage than good. But the twist to him leaving the athletic department is just going to the ASU law school and collecting the same amount of money that he did as an athletic director. And that is something that's really baked into his contract. So he can definitely fault Michael Crow for agreeing for the type of contract where an athletic director is no longer an athletic director at ASU, but as long as he remains a faculty member, he still gets to earn the same salary, which, suffice to say, it is probably quadruple, if not more than that, than the typical law professor at ASU. One more item you can really file under a damn shame that it's happening at Arizona State. The next question does come from Travis Rogers. And he said, I would like to get some kind of idea of how far behind ASU is in the NIL arena versus Big 12 members. And do you believe that Dillingham and Hurley have what is needed to get ASU there, knowing the alumni base has lost faith in the athletic department that is overseen by a school president who honestly doesn't seem to care? And look, I mean, I think there's definitely something to be said about some ASU fans being turned off then by the leadership of Ray Anderson, or lack thereof, I should say, leadership of Ray Anderson, and still being really dismayed by Michael Crow and his leadership and not wanting to donate. And look, I mean, I'm not here to tell people what to do, with their money. And I don't know, what kind of disposable income the average ASU fan does have and if they are willing and able to contribute to the NIL. But I would say that without those NIL donations, as much as somebody like Kenny Dillingham is trying his hardest to elevate the football program, and Bobby Hurley, maybe, I shouldn't say maybe, but definitely a day late and a dollar short trying to engage in his NIL efforts, if that support doesn't come, from the fans, even from the bigger boosters, then, those efforts ultimately are going to be in vain. And I understand people, being disgusted with the athletic department, being disgusted with Michael Crow, and unfortunately, they have many justifiable reasons to feel that way. But nonetheless, without that NIL support, ASU is going to be stuck somewhere middle of the pack, maybe the lower middle of the pack. I would say maybe around number 8 or maybe number 10, I should say, out of 16 teams in the new Big 12 in terms of NIL funds. I mean, that's my understanding of where they stand right now. I don't know if ASU would ever be in the top four or top five of the Big 12. It goes back to my earlier point of having extremely passionate fan bases that obviously have dug into their pockets and created NIL coffers that are definitely impressive, not only in football, basketball, but sometimes even in baseball for that matter. And it's going to take a lot for ASU to get to that level. But in terms of, you know, maybe climbing and being closer to number eight, number seven, rather than number eight, nine, 10, I think that that's what ASU is striving for. It's still going to be a challenge, maybe less of a challenge now than it was just four, five, 6 months ago. But nonetheless, that's where ASU does stand right now. And time will tell if the next few years in the Big 12, obviously being a new member of the conference, is it going to be a situation where ASU and ASU fans, maybe seeing all the passion that surrounds them with their conference foes, can that really contribute to NIL being at a higher level? The next question comes from Joe Kajic, and I hope I'm pronouncing this name right. It's been a while since I pronounced your name as a member of the ASU football team. The airing of grievance episode, 3! Yes, this is definitely a more than a mailbag. It's definitely a lot of airing of grievances. I want to know what the Sun Devil Club values for the major sports, meaning how much does baseball, basketball, football have in donor cash? To me, that's the biggest question mark. How much as fans do we support financially versus how much the university support? That's a complex question to answer, and I'm not saying this to brush off by any means, because in terms of how much the university does support the athletic department, that's an issue that I'm still looking in as we speak. And I hope to have answers in the next couple of weeks to come, because it has been a conflicting perception whether the athletic department is really enjoying tens of millions of dollars of support from the University Journal Fund, which I don't see a problem with, because instead of let the athletic department, you know, die in a vine, just to have the support that it needs when it's hard to generate that from ticket sales, it's hard to generate that from media contracts. I think that's a welcome move by the university. And I also feel that there is still a lot of ways it can be more efficient in using the funds that it has to its disposal. That goes back to my earlier point of possibly cutting sports to make it a more efficient athletic department. So that is something that definitely can only help the athletic department that much more. But then there was also a report, not so much from media organization, but something that did look well sourced, that did indicate that it's actually the athletic department that is really able to more than repay any financial support they're getting from the university. And the only reason I'm skeptic about that line of thinking is that ultimately the athletic department is the one that has to run more efficiently from a financial standpoint. So I cannot imagine that that fact does exist. But at the same time, whatever monies they're getting from the Universal General Fund, they're more than repaying back to the university. So again, that's part of a bigger picture that I do. I'm looking at it. You know, as far as, you know, the money in donor cash that all the sports are given, I mean, that's, you know, it's definitely not something that's out there in terms of public knowledge, to consume. I did say that, you know, if you're looking at the desired, NIL figures that at least football and basketball need to have. I mean, football, I think right now it just hovers around the $3 million a year. They would feel much more comfortable if it was about, I would say, 4.5 a year, just to be at a good NIL level that, again, can help retain the talent that they have, as well as have the ability to attract good prospects from the transfer portal. And let's face it, also sometimes true freshmen that are going to ask for those NIL paychecks. So that's, I think, the amount that ASU is striving for. You know, basketball, again, they will need about $1.5 million a year to really, really feel comfortable. I think they might be just about less than half of that for this year that just ended. So whether it's realistic or not for them to reach 1 million, reach a million and a half a year. Time will tell on that. So that will do it for this episode of the Devil Junkies podcast. Thank you so much for all the ASU fans that chimed in on my premium message board, Devil's Huddle, on Twitter, on Facebook, with your questions about Sun Devil sports, with the airing of grievances that definitely came through your questions. I think that is really much appreciated, not only by me, but also by everybody that is listening to this podcast right now. There's definitely going to be some interesting times coming up when it comes to ASU sports. We talked about the negotiated sanctions by the NCAA, the hire of a new athletic director. Spring practice for football is starting in just over a week. So to be clued in into all the happenings around Sun Devil Sports, athletic department, and the specific sports, make sure you're a premium subscriber at devilsdigest.com. We would love to have you part of my community. And if you like what you heard in this podcast, trust me, you'll hear a whole lot more as I interact with my premium subscribers on devilsdigest.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week.